You're listening to KSCO, Santa Cruz, Salinas, Monterey, and San Jose, and 104 FM. This is From the Bookshelf. I'm Gary Shapiro. Thanks for joining me. The show must go on, they say, but sometimes it doesn't go on, like, say, if the performer dies. There's a new book all about this, and it's called The Show Won't Go On, The Most Shocking, Bizarre, and Historic Deaths of Performers on Stage, by Jeff Abram and my guest, Bert Kearns. Bert Kearns is a journalist and television and film writer, producer, and director. Bert Kearns, welcome to From the Bookshelf.
Hey, thanks for having me. Great to be here.
Bert Kearns, in your research, have you discovered any deceased performer that did not die on stage? I mean, your book is chock full of stage deaths, film deaths.
Jeff and I originally had the idea, which was to do a book about performers who died on the way to a show. Did you know that John Entwistle died the night before The Who was to begin a national tour? He died at the Hard Rock Hotel with a hooker. Did you know that Lynyrd Skynyrd died after a show? Jim Croce died on the way to a show. And we started the research. We got above 1,000 performers who died in and around a show. When we said, you know, we have enough to do a book just on performers who died on stage. Well, that number was above 500. So we had to narrow it down from there. We said, okay, let's get rid of movie actors who died in front of the camera, stuntmen. We had already put athletes aside since they already, you know, walk into an arena or onto a field with death possibly being in the cards. So we narrowed it down to just people who died on stage in front of an audience, whether it's in a nightclub, a theater, a television audience, a live radio audience, even now today social media. We still had more than 500 cases, with cases stacking up every day. More people kept dying on stage every day as we wrote the book. Finally, we got it down to about 200 for this book.
You told me the other day in an email that, like, tons have died since you've been doing your little book tour.
Well, on our website, theshowwon'tgoon.com, we've listed about 20 performers who've died on stage in 2019. In the past 3 weeks, since to the end of August, there have been five. There was the drummer in a Motown tribute band in Norwalk, Connecticut. There was a bass player in a Chicago tribute band out of Long Island. There was a Spanish pop star who was killed on stage in front of 5,000 people when a pyrotechnic went in the wrong direction and hit her in the stomach. There was a contestant on South African Idol who collapsed on stage and then died. And there was an Indian pop star who was very popular. He was singing. He collapsed on stage and died, and that went viral immediately on the internet. It would have been six, but four-time Grammy winner Dan Warner, a guitar player, was performing at a club in Florida 2 weeks ago. He put down his guitar, walked to the bar, and had his heart attack at the bar and died. So he wouldn't make the book if he didn't exactly die on stage.
Now, you're not exactly responsible for these.
No, and everybody we talk to, because we do have radio hosts and podcast hosts involved, we say, no, we're not responsible, and we don't wish this on anyone.
Well, it is kind of a morbid subject for a book.
It is, but also we made sure that we didn't make fun of anyone in this book or say, ha-ha, look the way he went, although some of these passings are definitely ironic. The Broadway actress who sings the song Please Don't Talk About Me When I'm Gone and then collapses and gets a standing ovation. The opera singer who sings the words Too Bad We Can Only Live So Long falls off a 10-foot ladder to the stage and dies. But we made sure also that the stories we told are the stories of performers' lives and their careers. And it's sort of almost a traditional biography, but instead of leading to an Oscar or a Grammy or an Emmy, although they might get those along the way, the stories lead to this ultimate glorious moment of, you know, dying on stage, surrounded by their friends and colleagues and fans, and dying doing what they loved.
There was the sad story of the young man who had never been a human cannonball before, and his very first attempt at being a human cannonball was deadly.
Amazing when we find that people. You take a human cannonball or a bullet catcher. We found, you know, many deaths in those fields where people just, you know, don't get the hint. It's not the flight of a human cannonball; it's the landing.
Right, the sudden stop.
Well, there were so many great stories in the book, and I hated enjoying the book because, you know, you are enjoying to a certain extent the deaths of all these people. And some of them were people I loved very much. But and you said that you ruled out deaths while the camera was rolling in a film. I'm going to believe Tyrone Power died in front of the cameras. He had a heart attack while making a picture.
Tyrone Power was originally in the book. He died while doing a sword fight with a great friend, another actor, during the filming of Solomon and Sheba. We found out a very interesting, although this didn't make the book, we set aside Hollywood for a future volume. We did find out that he suffered a heart attack on the set, and then he was brought to a hospital nearby. This was, I think it was in Spain. And there are three different versions of what happened. One said that he went back to his hotel, you know, still dressed as Solomon, made it back to his hotel where his wife was there, and he was able to see his wife before he died. Another version is that he went right to the hospital and died before his wife got there. But the most interesting is that he actually died in his trailer, in his dressing room on the set. And his fellow producers and the people in charge of the set didn't want anyone on the set to know that he was dead. So they lifted him up and walked him out Weekend at Bernie style, had him wave to the crew, although he had already passed away, got him into the car and got him out of there. That's not funny.
Not at all. I mean, I love Tyrone Power, and I hate to think of that, but...
Yeah. And he happened to have been in the room when his father, Tyrone Power Sr., died. On the way to a movie set in Hollywood, he had a room at the Hollywood Athletic Club, and he had a heart attack, and he died in Tyrone's arms.
Well, there's that happens in your book a few times, that there's a family member who dies in a similar way that their other family member died.
Yeah, and also, you know, we talked to a lot of family members, and we talked to survivors, and that was also which added a level of seriousness and responsibility to this book, because, you know, we talked to someone whose father died, you know, 35 years ago, and they cry when they remember it. And, you know, one thing we wanted to find out is if that old showbiz axiom, you know, they die doing what they loved, if that brought any kind of comfort or solace to the survivors. And, you know, if when the performer is, like, really old, like, you know, in their 80s or 90s, you know, they all say that's the way they'd love to go, and that sounds great. But when it's someone like, you know, Dick Shawn, who's 63, or Oney Wheeler, who's, you know, in his late 50s, they say, no, we don't really get much solace out of that at all. We wish he had another 20 years. He had so much more to give.
I loved Dick Shawn, and I was very sad to hear the story of his death. He was, I don't know if people even remember him today, but what a wonderful comedian he was.
That was a very special chapter in the book, because we did talk to Dick Shawn's son, Adam Shawn, who, again, was a witness to the death, and he was there with his dad, who he called his best friend. And Adam's whole thing when we first met him was, he was like, why don't people remember my father, what he did? I mean, yes, you know, he died on stage, and that was, you know, one of the most infamous incidents in modern pop culture history, but he was so much more. You know, he was a surrealistic comic, he was a leading man, he was a Broadway star, he was a singer, he was a dancer. So one thing we tried to do in that chapter was to bring out the career of Dick Shawn, let people know how great he was. And he could have been a great Major League Baseball player, too. I think that surprised a bunch of people.
He's so great. And just among two things that strike me, you know, It's a Mad, 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 Mad World. He's hilarious in that picture where he plays Ethel Merman's hippie son. Or beatnik son, I guess.
Beatnik son, yeah.
And of course, he plays the LSD, the actor who plays Hitler in Springtime for Germany, and Springtime for Hitler in The Producers.
Yeah, he was wild. He was crazy.
Terrific guy. So now, Bert Kearns, you've produced and directed and written and tons of television shows and films. Have you ever had anybody die in a project you were working on?
I have not had anyone die on a project. Well, yes. Actually, I should take that back. I was working for a conspiracy theory with Jesse Ventura, and we were doing an episode on the death ray, which was a conspiracy theory that the government had a gun that they could shoot at you and through some sort of radio waves would induce a heart attack. We were up in Minnesota, and we were in an airplane hangar, and Jesse Ventura interviewed a man by the name of Fred Bell. And Fred Bell was on the conspiracy wavelength. He said he had worked for the CIA, and he'd worked for the government. And he confirmed to us that a death ray did exist, that there was a gun that can shoot you and stop your heart. And he said, you know, my CIA handlers don't like me saying this, but, you know, I don't care. They're not going to do anything to me. The next day, he died in his hotel room of a heart attack. And we immediately...
Suspected the death ray.
With the death ray. I should be laughing. It's bad. He's a nice guy. And we actually, we called the Minneapolis police and let them know about what happened. And they said, nah, it was a heart attack. But we'll never know.
Well, that's good.
And I also am a jazz aficionado. I dig jazz. And there are a few places in Los Angeles where old, you know, West Coast jazz figures from the 1950s are still alive and still play. And one night I went to, I'm not going to tell you the name of the person, he's still alive, but went to a show. He did a three-night stand, and I was at the first night. And I told my wife, we've got to come back tomorrow because I might die on stage.
But you didn't. Yeah. Well, of course, you can die on stage in a number of ways.
Yes.
But we're talking about literally dying on stage.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of the most famous stories in entertainment death history is the story of the health expert Rodale, who died on the stage of the Dick Cavett Show. And there's been so much, and Dick Cavett has written about it, and Robert Altman included it in his film Health, in which he had Dick Cavett play a talk show host. And no one has ever seen this film, but you have. And I suspect it's because I saw in your acknowledgement that our friend Robert Bader is acknowledged, and I think he probably played a hand in you getting to see. You actually saw this Dick Cavett Show.
Yeah, Robert Bader helped us out a lot through this book. We owe a lot to him, you know, from the beginning through inspiration, support, help. And he told Jeff, with whom he's been friends with a long time, if you find a publisher for this thing, we'll let you see the videotape, because he works with Dick Cavett. He's directing he actually directed a documentary that's going to be coming out soon about Dick Cavett and Muhammad Ali. I think you'll see that on HBO in 2020. But yes, no one has seen this. The show never aired. Dick Cavett has said that people come up to him maybe 20 times a year and say, I'll never forget the look on your face when that guy dropped dead on your show. And he said, really, were you in the audience, the studio audience? Because it never aired. We aired a repeat that night. I think what happened was that Dick Cavett talked about it the following evening, on the following night's show. And Rodale, who was a nutritionist, a natural foods expert, and a longevity expert, had he died while Dick Cavett was interviewing the journalist Pete Hamill. And while everything was going on, Pete Hamill just sat to the side and took some very studious notes, and he wrote a very detailed report on what happened the next day. And over the years, over the past 40 years, this is in 1971, it's become just, you know, it's passed on into myth. And even Dick Cavett, who doesn't bring himself to watch this very often, has told his recollections of the tape, of what happened, and some of that's not entirely accurate. So they allowed Jeff and I to view the tape, actually record the audio of the 90-minute episode, to give the first really accurate recounting of what happened when a guest died on the set of the Dick Cavett Show. And it's a bit different, you know, it's a bit different than the legend, but not any less impressive or ironic.
I'm Gary Shapiro. This is From the Bookshelf on KSCO, and we're chatting tonight with Bert Kearns, who, along with co-author Jeff Abraham, has written The Show Won't Go On, the most shocking, bizarre, and historic deaths of performers on stage. Bert Kearns, tell us about the most outstanding deaths of performers on stage that you've written about in your book.
Wow. Well, of course, there's the death of Tommy Cooper, the British comedy magician.
Oh, yeah, you can't unsee that now that you told me where to look for it.
Yeah, that's one where, you know, Tommy Cooper died in the homes of millions of people in Great Britain. He died on live television during a show called Live from Her Majesty's Theater. It was like the Ed Sullivan Show used to be here, a Sunday night show. He was enfeebled. He was old. He was about a 6'4", you know, giant, you know, burly comedy magician. He was wearing a big cloak. He was doing his magic cloak act, where he was going to stand by the curtain and the host was going to flip things through the curtain into his cloak, and he'd pull out a cactus, then he'd pull out a record player, then he'd pull out a ladder. It was an old corny joke. His assistant put on the cloak. He fell backwards against the curtain. The audience laughed. He let out a snore. The audience laughed some more. A hand came out from behind a curtain to try to pull him back. They realized something was wrong. More laughter. And he laid there on stage dying for a full 47 seconds before the director said, "No, this isn't right," and cut to a commercial. What happened next was they went to a commercial. They came back, and Donny Osmond was supposed to come on with a bunch of dancers and do a number. But they had Tommy Cooper's, you know, 250-pound frame behind that curtain, and so they couldn't bring the dancers out. So they threw a couple of impressionists out there and made them do their act while you could hear the machines going and people pounding on Tommy Cooper's chest trying to, you know, bring him back to life.
And this show must go on.
The show must go on. And then, ironically, I guess, one of those two performers who went on after Tommy Cooper, we found out about 2 years later, he died on stage of a heart attack.
It's bizarre. It's very bizarre.
Yeah, a lot of heart attacks out there. A lot of heart attacks. I mean, we've got, in the book, there are accidents, suicides, murders, but mostly there's a lot of heart attacks. I think it's the show business lifestyle of, you know, staying up late, smoky rooms, drinking, eating airplane food, being on the road, and not getting those checkups. You know, check your cholesterol.
Your deaths go back quite a ways in history. What's the oldest one that you found?
I think the oldest one is 1597. A French magician named Coulin. He was attempting the bullet catch when one of his assistants got angry and beat him over the head with the gun and killed him. The story with that is that is what, more than 400 years since that first death by a bullet catch. We found, you know, dozens more magicians and stunt people who died trying to catch a bullet, trying to catch a speeding bullet. The last one we have recorded is 2007. And we interviewed Penn Jillette, of Penn & Teller, who are probably the foremost practitioners of that bullet catch right now. And he let us in on a real deep, dark secret about the bullet catch, which I think we needed to share to any would-be magicians, which is that it's a trick. They're not really they're not really catching bullets. I mean, we have one case where Professor Marvo was on stage about to do the bullet catch, and somebody stood up in the audience and said, "Here, Professor, catch this," and shot him. And that person was acquitted in a trial because he said, I thought the guy was going to catch it. He said he could catch the bullet. That's not funny. And if you are going to attempt the trick, do not let your wife be your assistant and have a fight with her the morning before the trick, because that has happened where a wife exchanged the wax bullets for real ones.
Well, what about those, has there been occasions that you discovered where, like, the knife thrower in a knife-throwing act would accidentally kill the person they were throwing knives at, or something like that?
Yes, mainly the bullet catch is the one where that happened. There was a knife thrower in Australia who accidentally killed his female assistant. There are a lot of accidents like that, especially in, you know, the circus and carnival world.
Oh yeah, you have a whole chapter on terrible circus deaths, which seem to mostly have to do with faulty equipment of some kind.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things is, while we didn't include athletes, we did include circus performers, although their acts are supposedly death-defying, because they do consider themselves to be show people, not athletes. And, you know, we've got everything from, you know, the one-armed lion tamer, who lost his first arm to a lion, so you figure he might have gotten the message then. We have, and again, if you're a one-armed lion tamer and you're feeling nervous about going into a cage with five lions, don't have a few drinks in order to get your courage up. Another lesson you can learn from this book. But yeah, there's a number of circus deaths. I guess the one that gets its own chapter is the story of the great Wallendas, who really are the ultimate, the classic version of the show must go on. They've lost, you know, many family members in disasters and falls from the wire, but the show would go on. Carl Wallenda, of course, is the most famous. That, again, is available on video on YouTube. Carl Wallenda was promoting an appearance at a circus in Puerto Rico in the late 70s. He was doing a stunt in the morning. He was walking across the wire and fell to his death We interviewed the photographer who happened to have a motorized camera and was able to capture the images of him falling. He got back to the newspaper office, and his editor said, "What are you doing there? The Wallendas are going on at the circus." They're like, "What? The guy just died this morning." But no, his granddaughter and two nephews went on with the show that afternoon in his memory.
The show must go on, Bert.
Well, sometimes the show can't go on, but yes, often it does. Most often the shows go on when there are big crowds, when it's too dangerous to stop the show. We had that just recently, 2 years ago, the Mad Cool Music Festival in Madrid. Green Day was a featured performer. There were thousands of people out for this outdoor show, and their opening act was an aerial dancer. And this guy performed in a lighted cube 100 feet above the stage. He was held on by straps, but it looked like he was dancing in midair inside this cube. The straps broke. He fell on everyone's cell phone cameras, of course, because nobody just watches shows anymore. They have their cell phones going. On everyone's cell phone cameras and on the big screen, because the camera was positioned underneath him. He fell right toward the camera on the big screen, which led to, you know, shock and horror among the audience as they actually watched the rescue efforts go on the big screen. Well, 20 minutes later, Green Day took the stage and did their show with no mention of it. And while that show was going on, people in the audience were texting, you know, twittering and texting, "These animals, how dare their opening act just got killed in front of all of us, and they're going on with the show." Well, it turned out, you know, when the show was over, Green Day then found out about it. They had been about a mile away in a performer's, you know, rehearsal area before they went on stage and were brought to the stage in a van. And nobody told them that somebody just died. They just said there was some security issue. So they had to do a lot of public relations in the following weeks to let people know they were not, you know, heartless, cruel people.
There must have been some greed involved. I mean, the producers didn't want to give back anybody's money.
Yeah, of course. That's, you know, their explanation was, you know, we didn't want to cause a stampede or a riot. But sure, when it comes to, you know, money talks, yeah.
One of my favorite comedians, Joe E. Ross, from Car 54, Where Are You, and Bilko, and other things. It's About Time. He played a caveman. And he died on stage, according to your book, and he only was paid for half of his performance because he didn't give the whole show.
Yes, he was performing in the club room of the apartment complex that he was working in, putting on a show, had a heart attack, died. And then when his wife went to get the money, they said, "You know, you're supposed to get $100, here's $50. He only did half the show. That's happened more than once, where they don't get paid at all. Or where, you know, most horrifically, like in the case of Dick Shawn, while, you know, doctors were on stage trying to revive him, people in the audience wanted their money back.
Yeah, come on, we paid for a show.
We paid, you know, and which made his son even more, you know, these people pay $10. They want $10 back.
Do you think that part of the appeal of the book is that we're alive?
Yes, I think part of the appeal is we're alive, you know, of course, you know, there, but for the grace of God go we. But also I think it's an unexplored avenue of show business history, of performing arts history. And, you know, the stories are, you know, ironic. Some of them are humorous, you know, unintentionally or not. The way, you know, fate can be have a humorous twist. But also I think it's a way to learn a lot about performers, where we have very famous performers sort of laid shoulder to shoulder with obscure ones who are now, you know, very well known because of the way they died.
Well, the book is called The Show Won't Go On, The Most Shocking, Bizarre, and Historic Deaths of Performers on Stage. And the book is written by Jeff Abram and my guest, Bert Kearns. Thanks so much, Bert, for spending some time with us here on From the Bookshelf.
Hey, thanks for having me. And stay healthy.
That's it for this week's From the Bookshelf. I hope you enjoyed the program and will come back and see us again next week. In the meantime, check out our podcast page at fromthebookshelf.com. You can subscribe to our podcast wherever you subscribe to podcasts, and you can like us on Facebook. From the Bookshelf is produced by Francis Venegas and Ollie Jackson. I'm Gary Shapiro. Thanks for listening.